The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian's Tech Weekly, your destination for all things technological. Think of us as a guidebook to the landscapes of digitalia. We'll direct you to the must-see panoramas, highlight the must-go destinations, and sift through the rubble for the must-have gadgetry. Who needs techno travel when all of it fits into one happy podcast? I'm Alex Krotowski, and clearly I need a vacation. Joining me in the dark room of recording Nirvana is special guest star Kevin Anderson. Welcome, Kevin. Thank you very much for coming along today. What is your favorite piece of technology ephemera that you found this week?
Well, Twitter, our favorite microblogging tool, promptly raised £15 million and then celebrated by going down.
It did as well. I've been trying. Oh, it's been absolutely frustrating. You can see how many people are coming into Twitter because you're just getting invite after invite from people that you don't know. But you can't do anything about it because it's...
Twitter's down, Twitter's down. I mean, it's funny because I keep hearing it on Twitter, so it must not be down that much.
Well, coming up on today's show, we'll be joined by Pete Johnson from the BBFC. He's on the line to discuss the launch of their new online content classification system, and Chief Security Advisor for Microsoft UK, Ed Gibson, who explains where the weakest links in data security are. We'll also be hearing from our blog readers about the countless technology summits they've climbed and the internet valleys they've traversed. It really can't get any better than this. Join us on our Tech Weekly Travels, your passport to all technology destinations. I really, really do need a vacation, don't I? The first half of 2008 has been dominated by an obsession with regulation. The halcyon days of little Bobby or little Charles getting their hands on a digital version of Faces of Death 3 is almost over, thanks to an almost obsessional pursuit to classify online content. In the wake of the Byron Review, a document produced by Tanya Byron for the UK government outlining the outcomes of research on the effects of digital media on kids, the BBFC has worked hell for leather to produce a set of guidelines and classifications for anything Charles or Bobby might get their grubby hands on. The age ratings were launched last week under the heading BBFC Online. And on the line now is Pete Johnson, head of policy and business development from the BBFC, to discuss their development and what they mean in the wider media landscape. So, Pete, thank you very much for joining us. Why introduce this scheme now?
Well, we've actually been working on this since long before the Byron Review was even thought of. We actually went to the industry during 2006 and said, look, as you move from delivering your content on DVDs to delivering it online via download, do you want to take BBFC classification with you? And we also conducted some research with the public. We asked 4,000 members of the public whether they wanted to see BBFC classifications on downloadable films and programs. And we got 91% of parents saying yes, they did. So we sat down with key players in the industry to develop a scheme to do just that. And what we launched yesterday was the result of about 18 months of very hard work.
Will they be on the downloaded material? Will they be on, you know, before you click download this? Where will they be in the grand scheme?
They will be visible at point of sale, and then the classification information has to stay attached to the content as well. So after you've downloaded it, you'll still have that information attached. Now, the scheme allows members to do that in a number of different ways, but the sort of gold standard way of doing it is by attaching the famous BBFC black card that you see in cinemas.
Now, this is all for content that people are purchasing. What about things that you can download, say, for example, from YouTube? Are you going to get involved with that kind of digital distribution?
We've constructed the scheme primarily for the commercial distribution of Prime content. So films and programs, it's not really been constructed with user-generated content in mind, although if YouTube wanted us to classify certain of the material that's posted on their site, then obviously we'd be very happy to do so. But it's not really with that in mind.
Pete, it's Kevin here. I mean, considering that you just said that you might in the future classify YouTube content, how do you classify the deluge of content that's on YouTube, and YouTube just being one of several different sites out there?
The scheme's very flexible, so that, for instance, if YouTube wants to refer some of the more extreme content that appears on its site to us to get the reassurance of a BBFC classification on that, then we would scale up in order to deal with the extra business. But what I want to emphasize is this isn't about regulating everything on the internet at all. It is simply a voluntary membership club for those commercial distributors of films and programs online who want to demonstrate their social responsibility and who want to provide content with BBFC classifications attached. So it's, you know, it's not an attempt to classify everything online. That would be, you know, undoable, and it's not something we aim to do.
It would be very impressive if you were able to do that. Now, you're also doing games and online games. And PhantomX on the games blog, he asks about how this is going to be regulated. So at the minute, you've got the black card, you've got the information at point of sale.
Yeah.
Is there going to be anything, say, for 18-rated games or 18-rated content where a parent or guardian has to come in and say, right, okay, we're going to allow this to be downloaded? His specific comment is, I wonder how this will be kept secure. At the moment, online age filtering is woefully inadequate. He says, go to any site that asks for your age, select a drop-down date, month, year, at least 18 years ago, and you're done. Even if you do go too young, you can click again and you can put in a new date and you're through. How is this going to be regulated?
Yeah, absolutely. 2 points there. Just on the games issue, this scheme is not about regulating games that are hosted online. It only includes those games which you can actually download, so where the internet's being used as a distribution medium rather than a playing medium. But on the issue of gatekeeping, absolutely. That sort of, you know, self-verify your age from a drop-down menu is ridiculous, and scheme members will have to operate gatekeeping mechanisms which are much more secure than that. We are looking for people to identify their age if they're 18 using a credit card or similar, and if they are setting up sub-accounts for members of their family, then we would allow somebody who has proven their age through a credit card check to set up sub-accounts as long as those are PIN protected for younger people in the family. And they're also a developing range of different tools that people can use, as NetIDMe, for example, where parents can actually register the age of their children with a third party, and then the children can have a digital token that they can use to establish their age when they're buying online, which is very good for our scheme, which obviously has ages like 12 and 15, which are otherwise quite difficult to prove.
You mentioned that it's a club or a club-like experience for the members who are involved. Who do you already have involved with the scheme?
Well, members have only been able to join this week, and already we've got three of the major studios fully signed up. So we've got Disney, Warner Brothers, and 20th Century Fox, which is pretty good going for the first 3 days.
I'm going to harken back very quickly to think about the games, because, well, you do mention that you're only purely looking at distribution. There are existing games ratings schemes, particularly the PEGI, Pan-European games rating schemes, which has been voluntary and has been, you know, lauded as quite an effective games rating scheme. So how does this fit with regard to that existing classification system?
We are replicating online the system that exists offline at the moment. At the moment, a number of games have to come to the BBFC rather than going through PEGI because they are caught by the Video Recordings Act. Basically, games are exempt from BBFC classification unless they contain certain elements such as gross violence or human sexual activity. So at the moment, we already have this situation where some games in the UK have PEGI ratings on them and some have BBFC ratings. Looking forward, Byron has recommended, and the government has accepted, that in future all games in the offline world should carry BBFC ratings. I think this fits in very neatly with that.
Well, thank you very much, Pete Johnson. Now it's time for the news read by Jemima Kish.
In the latest round of Viacom versus YouTube, Google claimed in court papers that the $1 billion case could challenge the fundamental freedoms of the internet. Viacom says more than 150,000 copyright-infringing clips are on the site, but Google says it has gone above and beyond its legal obligations. Microsoft says it plans to pay consumers who buy products they find on live search. The cashback scheme is designed to try and incentivize web users away from Google, which has more than a 60% market share in the US alone. And American publishing giant Condé Nast paid around $25 million to buy the 10-year-old US tech blog Ars Technica. The site has around 1.5 million users each month and will sit alongside Wired.com and Reddit in the Condé Net stable.
Thanks, Jemima. You can read more about these stories and others all week at guardian.co.uk/technology. Just how secure is your PC? In a recent hacker competition, the latest Microsoft operating system, Vista, fared pretty well, ironically, against the Apple Leopard system. But many commentators think that that was just a fluke, and Windows is riddled with more holes than a block of Emmental. Then again, as we found in the UK, it doesn't necessarily take a dodgy operating system to lose a bunch of data. Kevin, you met up with Ed Gibson, Chief Security Officer of Microsoft in the UK, and apparently former FBI special agent, and you dug deeper into the breaches and what Microsoft is trying to do to close those gaps. What happened?
Well, I mean, obviously they were touting Vista and how much more secure Vista is over XP. And he did say, and I think I asked him the kind of standard question, how do you keep yourself safe? And he said, you know, just keep up with your updates, keep your virus software current. But one of the things he told me is that people are still making some really common mistakes.
One thing that I often see on the desktop or consumer side, and it's not unusual, is that somebody will buy a brand new computer, whether it be a desktop or a laptop, and they'll get a free six-month trial or a year trial service for an anti-malware or antivirus software, and nothing happens in that time, so the person says, why should I pay for it? And that's something that we all need to pay attention to. Make sure that your software is updated and you have your current anti-malware, anti-spam software.
Now, you mentioned the technical side, but you also mentioned social engineering. And security experts always say that one of the greatest security threats is the user, whether that's in a business sense or consumer sense. So what are some of the tricks, whether it's phishing with email or even people doing some more direct solicitation of information? What do people have to worry about or be aware of, better way to put it, when it comes to protecting their personal information?
I'm a computer user as well, and I have the very same concerns. And it wasn't too long ago where we would say, well, make sure you're checking for the gold padlock on the either the bottom or the top of the web page. Make sure that you don't click on any hyperlinks in an email from someone you don't know. But the technology has gotten so good now that organized crime is into technology in a big way, and I'll talk about that in a moment. That the padlock can be spoofed, for example. Social engineering is nothing more than an email will come into your email box and ask you to do something that you would not normally do if you knew all the facts. It's like driving a car. We all know how to drive a car because our parents did, or our older brother and sister taught us, and we had years of experience. However, when it comes to the internet, technology is moving so fast, we don't have that year upon year of take-up.
What are some good tips for them to keep their information safe and secure so they can share their photos and share their you know, life story, but not paint a good enough picture to actually have their identity stolen?
There is no social network that I am aware of, either in the UK or US, that when you open up an account, that it is private by default. That account is open to the entire world. So as soon as you post something, whether it be your name, address, the entire world can see it. There are people around the world who engage 24 hours a day to trawl the social networking sites to harvest details.
So you mentioned organized crime, and you know, there's a lot of really scary language these days used when it comes to security on the internet. You know, cyber terrorism, cyber jihad. I mean, how real are these threats?
That's an area that would take a little bit of discussion. But very generally, we in the industry, and particularly in the law enforcement or security service industry, look at the phrase cyber jihad or cyber terrorism with a bit of a jaundiced eye, because number one, that label or those labels invoke a fear factor which may be very unnecessary. It's particularly since 9/11, it's easy to say a certain kind of criminal activity is terrorist activity when in fact it wouldn't be anything different than ordinary criminal activity. However, that said, I can't dismiss that there is organized crime on the internet who is taking advantage of unsophisticated users through the things that we just talked about.
Microsoft, because of its dominant position, has been a target for a lot of malware, a lot of viruses. Before Service Pack 2 for Windows, if you installed Windows, there were people that showed that you could compromise that computer in 20 minutes. It was really a quick process. So what has Microsoft done? I mean, for a while, people accused them of sort of looking at the functionality, but not necessarily security as a default position. What is Microsoft doing to sort of improve that?
In the late 90s, early 2000s, criminal activity on the net just didn't exist. So there wasn't absolutely no need for an operating system or software to have even security in mind, because there just was no reason to do that. For example, when automobiles were first developed in the 40s by Ford, they didn't have airbags and whatnot because the cars didn't go very fast. So it's the same thing in security. Now that so much money and shopping and information is on the internet, that's where the money is. I mean, that's the bottom line. Windows Vista is the first operating system that was built from the ground up with security in mind. In fact, Microsoft has the capability of looking at over 400 million computers around the world. And in the UK, what we found as a result of this, of the latest 6-month survey, is that we don't have to be too concerned about viruses anymore in the UK. In fact, of the top 5 malware and unwanted software products that we see, viruses aren't even in the top 5 anymore. However, what is in the top 5 are Trojan downloaders.
So you said you've got some horror stories about organized crime and what they're doing. What's a good colorful story of the mob going digital?
Let's just keep in mind that the internet is where the money is now. From my prior life, I spent 20 years with the FBI as a special agent, last 5.5 years assigned to the American Embassy in London, in charge of the Bureau of Cyber High-Tech Work in the UK. And we know that we don't see many banks being robbed anymore because people are aware that there's CCTV, there's likely a guard in the bank, but really, potential robbers know that there's not a lot of money in the bank to steal. But where is the money? It's on the internet. But the benefit of that is that more people going online will have a better understanding on how to keep safe online. But that also gives organized crime far more players to play with. So we've just got to be careful in that regard. Yes, could I tell you horror stories? I could, but it wouldn't do a consumer any good. Update the software and you avoid having to even hear about those horror stories.
That was Ed Gibson. So Kevin, he's Chief Security Officer for Microsoft UK. He's particularly concerned about the amount of information that we're willingly giving away on things like social networking sites. How much, though, does this really reflect a new shift in our notions of personal privacy as opposed to a traditional view of what privacy is and what information is ours?
Well, I think you're right. I mean, we're sharing a lot more information about ourselves. You know, we're sharing pictures, we're sharing videos, we're sharing, just even little snippets of our day, whether it's a Facebook status or a Twitter update. So we are sharing lots more information, but it's increasingly easy. And tools that make life easier online also make it easier for identity thieves to knit together a picture of you that they could use to steal your identity. And I think that was his primary concern. You hear horror stories about people who have been the victim of identity theft and the not only time but, you know, money that they have to spend just to resecure their identity and sometimes, you know, resecure their credit rating. You know, it's a hell people just don't want to go through.
It's also a real opportunity for entrepreneurs who are able to come back and pick up the pieces as
True.
Well. Anyway, thank you very much, Kevin, and also to Ed Gibson. And now it's time for your turn at the mic, if you'll allow us to be your mouthpieces, that is. What's been happening on the blogs this week? Kevin, you're taking over the helm of the Games blog. What's going on this week on Games blog?
On the Games blog, we've been discussing the longevity of the games on the Wii. And Greg has been writing, the game has battled with GTA 4 for chart supremacy since its release, and assuming stock supply holds up, I can see it outselling Take-Two's Epic in the long run, but I'm beginning to wonder how much use the board will get once the novelty wears off. A few weeks in, and my copy is already beginning to gather dust. I picked it up last night for the first time in 10 days, and can't see myself rushing back too quickly. Any novelty in the house and household has definitely worn off. And we've got a comment from Patrick Bateman, who extends the longevity question by asking, when's Wii Shag Eva Longoria out?
I can imagine, actually, the Wii Fit board would be useful for that, but I'm not even going there.
Another way to burn calories, right?
Indeed. Many thanks to you all for contributing, and we will be back with more of your views on the news that matters next week on Tech Weekly. In the meantime, do get in on chatting. Come on over to blogs.guardian.co.uk/games/digital-content/technology. Alternatively, you can email us at tech@guardian.co.uk, that's tech, T-E-C-H, or phone us on the Skype line, which is Guardian Tech Weekly. Guardian Tech Weekly, do phone. This week's topic is inspired by last week's release of Indiana Jones and the Zimmer of Frame, which is that's just the silly little joke that Charles has been writing about on Twitter. Who is your favorite misplaced leading man or lady? They could be too old or too young, but which actor is utterly miscast in their role as an action hero? Do let us know. And while you're at it, visit us on Facebook too at the I Love the Guardians Tech Weekly podcast group, or sign up to our brand spanking new Twitter feed and have a say in what we record in future programs. You can find us at Guardian TW. That's almost it for this week. Next week, we're returning to robotics on Tech Weekly, and we're talking artificial intelligence. There'll be more on all that and other things forthcoming on next week's Tech Weekly. I'm Alex Krotowski, and as usual, it's been a pleasure. Many thanks to our guests, Pete Johnson and Ed Gibson, and in the studio, superstar Kevin Anderson. Thank you very much for coming in. Now, y'all come back now, you hear? Next Tuesday should be just about right, so see you then.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.